Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, February 1st, 2017. And with me today, I have Kelly Gumont. How are you, Kelly?
I'm doing well, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. And John Martellaro, how are you?
I am here. I am also your personal astrophysicist.
That's right. Our star among the stars. Yeah. And John, I'm betting you're probably disappointed that I totally nailed the date once again. Yeah.
Hey. No, I think it's great that you continue to do so sublimely and so perfectly, despite my valiant efforts to mess you up. You do splendidly.
Yes. One does what one can. Hey, we have a sponsor today. And that sponsor, yeah, yay, Blue Apron. And that's pretty cool. We'll talk about them in a bit. But hey, we have some other stuff we need to get to first. And that we're going to have to start with the quick obligatory rundown of Apple's earnings report from yesterday. So the short version is Apple made all the money. And that equates to $78.4 billion dollars in revenue for their first fiscal quarter of 2017. That's up from $75.9 billion in revenue from the same quarter a year ago. And they sold gobs of iPhones, 78.2 million iPhones. Mac sales were up slightly. iPad sales were down 19%.
Think how many Macs they could have sold.
And their services business, which includes the App Store, Apple Music, iCloud,
Apple Care,
stuff like that. That is bringing in so much money now that it qualifies as a Fortune 100 company all on its own.
Now, Apple Watch is part of services. Isn't that the shuffle that they made?
No.
There was a shuffle that I thought was the watch so that they wouldn't have to tell us how many there were. I'm just misremembering.
I don't think Watch is considered part of services. But they did shuffle things around so that hardware is kind of obfuscated as to what's what. So maybe that's what you're thinking.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, Tim Cook said Apple Watch sales were doing very well, but he still didn't give us any numbers, so we don't know what that means.
Right, and he's not going to give us numbers. They made that very clear from the very beginning.
Right, we've never had numbers.
Right. No. But we did get some interesting little gems tossed out to us during the earnings report yesterday. And John, one of them landed squarely in your lap, and it was Tim Cook saying that the iPhone hasn't reached maturity yet. So we need to dive into that. Fill me in.
It was at the very end of the earnings call, and I was beginning to despair that there was no grand, exciting tip-off or sort of softball pitch so that Tim could say something interesting, which he usually does. And I usually circle in my notepad when Tim Cook says something, I say, aha, this is a pre-prepared thing that he wants to, kind of release and have us all get all twittered about in all respects. And so at the very end of the call, UBS analyst Steve Milanovich throws in the softball pitch, I think, and says, investors tend to think of the iPhone as mature with only minor incremental improvements, yet there could be a runway left for new improvements. Do you think there are future enhancements coming along that would surprise people? And of course, you would suspect that Tim Cook would off the cuff have a very official CEO-ish self-serving response, but he said it in a kind of interesting way that appealed to me. He said, I think the smartphone is still in the early innings of the game. I think there's lots more to do. I think it's become every year more important to people's lives. And then he went on and talk about some other things. He said, I talked about health earlier, but I could have talked about the enterprise. I could have talked about other things, CarPlay. But the thing that struck me about his comment was that it's become every year more important to people's lives. And that's really fundamental. The phone used to be kind of a cool little gadget that made phone calls as a cell phone, and you had internet access. But now the iPhone is seeped into our lives in a very fundamental way, and that means it's not going away anytime soon. And neither is a small device that you can hold in your hand with great computational power and great communications capability going away anytime soon. And so I started, So I started thinking about the evolution of the phone in technology and how it has come to absorb more and more fundamental elements in our life. And I think Apple Pay is a good example of starting off modestly and then using the security and encryption capability with a phone to develop a new fundamental cool thing that we can do that becomes part of our lives. Health awareness and fitness management is just the beginning. And I went on to talk about how I surmised that the phone would play a much bigger feature, much bigger role in our future with artificial intelligence agents like Siri and health monitoring tools. I mean, if you had a device that you could occasionally in your house, you know, prick your finger with and get a blood sample, you could have a complete biomed lab with your phone analyzing it, consulting with a supercomputer, perhaps doing diagnosis of illness or sicknesses, and all with FDA oversight and approval, you know, actually suggesting something quantifiable that would help you. So those are just a couple examples of the way I think this handheld supercomputer in our pockets with communication capability is going to become pervasive, even more fundamental to our lives, and has great future ahead of it. And anybody who thinks that a smartphone is out of gas and has reached technical maturity just doesn't have any vision. And so that was the crux of my article. And I think we're in, speaking of innings, I think we're about the second inning of the smartphone era, not the ninth.
So, John, I'm going to say, not that you are wrong, but I think that there's an avenue here that has yet to be fully, I think, pursued. And in a word, it is cahoots. I don't think Apple needs to be the one to make that monitor. I think they should be in cahoots with someone who does. I think Apple should be in cahoots with people, you know, like all the Kit stuff. You know, people are making HomeKit devices. We have the Made for iPhone program. These are the kinds of things that I think Apple needs, which, to be fair, really hasn't ever been Apple's strong suit, teaming up with somebody else. Like, the one time they got it right, Steve came back and killed it. So, and that would be the clone program. So for me, it's that Apple needs to sort of ease that stance and evolve into a company that does work super closely with these other people to make an awesome blood monitor, to make an awesome thing that lives in your house, that interfaces with your phone, that does, you know, another thing, you know, whatever that other thing may be. You know, maybe you need to turn your toaster fridge on and off, and this is a great way to do that.
I see that in the TV industry. I don't see Apple going to the big technical conferences. I don't see Apple, you know, plugging themselves into the 4K community.
No,
I don't see Apple delivering certain kinds of hardware that plays well with our other 4K devices.
No, I'm just talking about Apple needs to work on that. Yeah, I'm talking about the
phone. What I'm saying is that Apple's mentality has to evolve as exactly right. as you said. Yes.
Well, and it's because initially their stance was smart, which was, we make the hardware, we make the software. That way we know the experience is what we want it to be because we control the whole thing, soup to nuts. And you know, Windows didn't do that. And so the Windows experience that you have, it depends greatly on the computer that you have. There's a lot of variance. There's I was a Windows tester for a while. Wow. It was before years started to, it was before years started with two. It's still why I drink. And, you know, there's so much variance and there's so much that you have to try and account for. You know, we see a similar thing today in the Android space because Android has the Windows approach. Like the great thing about Android is anybody that wants to can make an Android phone. And the terrible thing about Android is that anybody who wants to can make an Android phone. Mm-hmm. So you don't know what resolution as a developer, you don't know what resolution you're working with. You don't really know how much room on the screen you have. Mm-hmm. You don't know what the physical hardware looks like. If they're going to have a button they can push in order to do a certain thing. So how do you sort of allow for that? And
you don't have, but hardware I feel like, encryption.
Right. And I feel like Apple needs to find the sweet spot between we make the hardware and the software. We control the entire experience. So say we all, and the minefield that is developing for Windows or developing for Android, because it's complicated. And I really want them to find that piece in the middle where they can find a partner. My father-in-law is diabetic and I keep wishing that somebody made an awesome connected monitor that he could put on his phone, because I know he always has his phone. And if he could take all those records with him when he goes to the doctor instead of having to enter them himself, if his phone just already had those, it would be amazing. And I think it would help a lot, you know, when he is having to adjust medication and things like that. And, you know, for other people who have a variety of other medication, it seems like it would be a really good thing. Like I want to, you know, here's what my, I have a blood pressure monitor so I can monitor what my blood pressure is doing because my doctor is adjusting my medication. My doctor will already have those results when I get to the office. You know, having that sort of stuff available is outside Apple's realm. And I want to think, because I'm an optimist, I want to believe that Apple knows what they know and knows what they don't know and knows what they don't want to know.
All right.
We aren't interested in building blood pressure monitors. So we're just going to we're going to partner up with a company that does.
Okay. So I'm going to play every listener right now because I'm certain I know what pretty much every listener is saying. But Kelly, but John, Apple has already done this. And it's called HealthKit and it's called HomeKit. And now I'll jump in as just me and say, yes, Apple has done these things and they are a great start. And I think that this is Apple tipping their hand at how they're going to make the iPhone even more of a nexus in our lives. And it's by creating a system that other people plug into. And sure, Apple can partner with some companies for specific types of devices or features. But I think that the bigger thing for Apple is to create the framework, build it up, and they're in the process of building both of those frameworks up right now. And then ultimately, we have this system that other companies can easily plug into and dramatically enhance what our iPhones are doing for us.
That's why the phone will continue to evolve.
And that's what I want from these two, from the kits, is I want them to evolve. I don't want them, because if you've read any of the stories, and you probably read them less eagerly than I did, about companies submitting hardware for HomeKit certification, and I understand why, but Apple made it really hard to be a HomeKit certified device. It's easier to be a HealthKit certified device from what I have read. And I want them to be rigorous because security, which was something that I heard Tim Cook say a lot yesterday during the call when we were talking about HomeKit devices and his personal house setup, which I'm super unbelievably interested in. Like, what does he use as his setup? And I want it to continue. I want it to be better. I want it to be easier. I want it to be something where anyone can submit, and as long as they are meeting all the standards, it doesn't necessarily have to be a long drawn out process. I want it to continue to grow and evolve and be more efficient. And I feel like that's the next evolution of the phone. It's not necessarily what the screen can do or if there's a home button or whether or not it fits in my pocket. It's going to be the other piece of it. Like, what kind of ecosystem is available to me if I buy an iPhone? what else can I do?
Mm-hmm.
That's where I think that piece is coming from. Cause you know, first of all, we had the iPhone, which had never been done before, was super interesting. What's hilarious to me about that now is everybody who looked at the first generation iPhone and went, oh my God, who would carry around a phone that big? It's so big. And I laugh and laugh about that now. But from there, then we got the App Store, which was a fundamental shift in how people used their phones. And then we started getting, other services that could plug into your phone so that your phone was able to do that more, was able to do even more for you, that your, maybe your computer, you know, taking the place of some of the tasks you would do on your computer. And so I want to know what the next evolution of that is going to be. And I think that this is going to be the post PC thing. I don't think it's going to be the Apple TV the way I wished and wished and wished. I think the phone is what's ultimately going to end up be what becomes the post PC legacy that Apple talked about all those years ago.
Yeah. And that wouldn't surprise me at all, because Apple wants us to have their technology on our bodies all the time.
Right.
And it's really easy to do with an iPhone.
Yes.
Yeah. So I have a feeling there will be lots for us to talk about as the iPhone continues to grow, especially since we are, according to Apple, well, and according to John, in the early innings. So I'm excited to see what is in store for our future iPhones. And hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Blue Apron. And for those of you that that aren't familiar with Blue Apron, well, now you will be. It's a company that comes up with all these really interesting meals that are all made with fresh quality ingredients. But instead of packaging it all up and sending you a pre-made meal, what they do is send you the ingredients so that you can make it yourself. And they have these menus. You check it out every week, figure out what on the week's menus look good to you, select those, or just trust that they're going to send you something that's interesting, and they will, and have all the ingredients for meals delivered right to your door. So they go out and they find the best produce that they can, and they like to use produce that comes from regenerative farming. So they're trying to be as eco-friendly as they can with everything that they're sourcing. Their seafood comes from sustainably standards. And I'm just saying that the most awful way. But anyhow, they're not killing all the fish. And they make sure that the other meats that they need, you know, whether it's pork, beef, chicken, whatever, it's coming from responsibly raised animals, and they're doing a really good job of getting high quality food ingredients, and then they pop it all in a box for you, send it off to you, and then you get these really, really high quality instruction sheets that have photographs of what everything is, so that if you're not familiar with an ingredient, and one that I wasn't familiar with at first, barramundi. That's it's a type of fish. It's an Asian sea bass. And now you guys know what barramundi is as well, and you won't need the photograph like me. But anyhow, so. These instruction sheets give you step-by-step walkthrough on how to make the meal with photographs all the way through. When you're done, you have something that looks like it came out of a really high-end restaurant, but without the high-end restaurant prices. So what they're doing to make this more enticing, because saving money is a great thing all the way around, what you can do is go to the special URL that they gave us, blueapron.com/TDO. That's blueapron.com/TDO. And pick out one of the meal packages, and the first three meals in that package will be free for you. Also, you don't pay shipping. So you can try this out at a lower cost, and it's already reasonably priced anyhow. So score. And get some free meals and try out some food that you may not have thought to make before, and it's going to be really good. You're really going to like it. So that's blueapron.com/TDO. And thank you to Blue Apron for being our sponsor. Okay, so we are close to out of time, but before we go, I want to get your impressions, and I bet John's going to have some amazing insights here, on the news that Prince's streaming music library, which has been limited to Tidal since 2015, is coming back to other streaming music services. So what's going to happen is during the Grammy Awards ceremony, which is on February 12th, the music library that he has that's under the Warner label is going to be available beyond Tidal. So Apple Music will have it, Spotify will have it, some other services will have it. So Prince is coming back to multiple streaming music services, and I'm curious of what you guys think about that.
Kelly?
Well, I'm conflicted. Because I am personally excited for myself, because there are Prince albums I do not own that I would like to occasionally hear a song from sometimes, and I would like the opportunity to do so. However, on the other hand, this decision was a decision that Prince made, mm-hmm. and it feels... Because I'm not a person in the room, I wasn't there when anybody decided any of this. I don't know any of the politics that went into Prince doing it in the first place or anything like that. It feels almost disrespectful to me to reverse something that was sort of fundamental to Prince being Prince, was that if you wanted to hear his music, you had to buy his records.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm conflicted about it. I think it's something that will be very interesting to see as an effect. You know, on March 12th, how many more people are subscribed to any of these services as a result of Prince's catalog being there, or how much money has Prince's estate made, you know, off of those songs. You know, I think that will be probably a more interesting story than the fact that it's coming back, because from here, just based on what else I've heard about Prince's estate, it sort of sounds like they kind of went, we're not making enough money off of him yet. So let's see what we can do about that.
Sure, you don't want to leave money on the table, do you?
That he was the one that left it there. So I sort of feel like, you know, but that's because I'm a very, ask anybody, I'm a if it had been his decision and it was up to me, it would never occur to me to revisit that decision.
Now, my take on this is that I think if Prince had lived longer than he did, because he died several months after he made this decision. And mm-hmm. my guess is that if he had been alive to see how Tidal was evolving, that within a few months, he would have reversed course and put his music back on other streaming services. And the reason he went with Tidal exclusive was because he felt that it was going to be better overall for artists, and you were getting higher audio quality for what you were buying. And mm-hmm. they very quickly changed so that they had an audio quality level that was in line with everyone else, and you had mm-hmm. to pay extra for the higher audio quality level, and artists were very quickly getting upset because they didn't feel like they were being treated fairly. They weren't getting paid what they thought they were going to get. And I think that Prince very quickly would have decided that's not what he signed on for, and would have opened up his music to other artists or other services again.
And that's maybe legit.
And maybe that's just me justifying, but but there you go. All right, so we're like really out of time. But John, you haven't had a chance to chime in, And I'm curious if you have any thoughts on.
Well, the only thought I have on that is, I'm not that familiar with these affairs, but it seems to me like when somebody's alive, they have the opportunity and the requirement to express their particular wishes. And he was, I take it, wealthy enough to make a decision about what was best for artists as a whole. But yes, when he's gone, now his estate is in charge of those affairs, and they're responsible for the management of his estate. And they may not have the same feelings about the situation and supporting artists that he did. And they probably felt like they were leaving money on the table, and it was their prerogative to do the best they could for the resources that they were managing. That's how I look at it.
So basically, business is business.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, we really are out of time, so we have to wrap up. Kelly, thank you for being here today.
Of course, it was my pleasure.
And John, thank you for being here as well.
Hey, my pleasure. And it wasn't my pleasure that I wasn't able to use the bell with Kelly, so I'll just chime out. Bye, Kelly.
Oh, bye, John.
Hey, Blue Apron, thank you for being our sponsor today. Listeners, head over to the Blue Apron website. That's blueapron.com/TDO and get the first 3 meals in your order for free. And you're going to like it. I'm pretty sure you're going to like it. Anyhow, just go do that. blueapron.com/TDO. Listeners, thank you for joining us yet again. We'll see everyone tomorrow.